This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Sharp Money. It is VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We say hi on a Thursday. Got NFL football coming up tonight in the preseason. We'll get to that in just a bit. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson back in Vegas. I'm live from Los Angeles. Remember when we're going to get into as we continue with our theme of college football. We pick for a day, always themed out. Today's will be remember when. Throw up the quad box for me, boys, downstairs if you can. Colorado, you remember Bill McCartney, 1990 national champs. They're a remember when Amal Shaw program. Tennessee, six-time national champ. Phillip Fulmer, whatever happened to old Phil? That's a remember when program. BYU, quarterback you back in the day, Lavelle Edwards, West Coast offense, remember when, and of course, Nebraska, 94, 95, 97, Tom Osborne, remember when. Those are the four we're going to attack today, boys. Also, the newlywed, Josh Applebaum makes his triumphant return to Sharp Money. Emery Hunt kills it on the NFL, talking CBS. Vinny Maliulo, just a jolt of electricity. And Ben Lieber will join as well. Let me say hi to the boys as we get it going with this sharp bash today. That's for Dustin. What's up, Amal? How you doing?
I'm well, thanks, man. Ready to go. Looking forward to getting through some of these great teams in the 90s. By the way, if you're a Nebraska fan, you wish it was 95. I just got to say this out front. 2001 Miami, the most talented team, Patrick. The best team ever, 95 Nebraska. Won every game by 14 or more.
I don't disagree with you. When we start talking about Nebraska and Tennessee, we could go on and on about individual players that were just legendary. I mean, we could just go on. I totally agree with you about that Nebraska team as well. And we all should have, for today's program, we should have worn our starter jackets because Dustin Sweetelson, a.k.a. Krabby Pants, a.k.a. run the show, a.k.a. run the network, you sleep on the fact that my sophomore year in high school, while everybody was running around with the Honolulu blue and silver Lions and the maize and blue Michigan and the green and white Sparty party, I had an orange Tennessee starter jacket that was triple XL. I could hardly fit my whole body into it like a tent, but I was running around like I was T freaking Martin. You sleep.
RIP Lawrence Phillips, my favorite player on those Nebraska teams, by the way. And I had a
legend.
I had an
legend,
I had an LSU starter jacket, and I had no idea that the L in LSU stood for Louisiana at the time.
Can we find either of you guys in a rap video somewhere from the 90s with those jackets?
You could definitely find me pretending to be a rapper in my Tennessee starter jacket. And I actually got it because I had another starter jacket, but Tim Donahue, RIP actually, passed away. But Tim Donahue was wearing his Tennessee starter jacket, and we just did a swap like we were Messi and Ronaldo after the match. We did a swap at the game, at the basketball game, because I was like, that Tennessee starter jacket's lit. And whenever one I had a Houston Oilers one on, and he was like, I like that. So we swapped it. Also, I was a big, big Houston Oilers fan back in the day. I mean, that was my joint.
But you know, the number one starter jacket everyone wanted, right? Think about the era and the colors. It was the Charlotte Hornets starter jacket. That was a number one.
Larry Johnson. Yeah.
Well, people liked overrated number one picks?
No, it was about the colors.
I know. I'm just kidding. He said LJ. That's why I just didn't understand the affinity everybody had for LJ. But, you know, I'm going to tell you, you mentioned Tennessee. I was on a bad losing streak, and I made one of the worst plays ever. They go into a bowl game with Peyton his freshman year. They're playing Virginia Tech. I forgot what useless bowl game it is. They're laying 9.5. And Patrick, I just lost so many games in a row. I said, well, you know what? I'm going to start out with nearly a 10-point lead. And let's put it that way. That 10-point lead lasted maybe about half a quarter. And Tennessee just rocked Virginia Tech's world. And it's like, you can't just take the points because you're getting killed every game, just hoping to have an early lead.
Well, speaking of getting killed every game, there was a story today that broke. And I think we should lead here on Sharp Money and VSIN with a big story. Now, for those that are in the know, this story will be next. You don't even blink at what I'm about to tell you. But here's a little hint. It has to do with Phil Mickelson and gambling. Also, Billy Walters, the white whale. He's been on the network many times. Billy Walters is the unquestioned greatest sports bettor of all time.
everybody agrees he is the standard that by which all is measured. But it came out that, you know, Phil Mickelson has a bit of an itch. He likes to bet. He bet 110,000 to win 100 on a total of 1,115 games. He bet 220,000 to win 200,000 on a total of 858 times. Made 3,154 bets in 2011. Made 43 Major League Baseball bets in a single day. You can go on and on about Phil and what he did. He also asked, apparently and allegedly, he asked Billy Walters to get down in 2012 Ryder Cup for the United States to win for $400,000. And here's what I would say about this. Next story, Amal Shaw, bettors bet. This is what I've done. Now you got to scale it out. I'm not pretending to be Phil Mickelson as far as scale is concerned, but people like you and I that have been doing this our whole entire lives, and you see kids getting into it with the parlays and getting itchy about their win streaks. I get it. Temper the excitement. It'll all even out, like Amal just explained with the bowl game. But here's what you have to understand. Bettors bet. Let's talk about Michael Jordan. Let's talk about Phil Mickelson. Let's talk about human beings. And this is the human condition. Phil Mickelson is a golfer. And when you're talking scale, these numbers that I'm spitting at you, 220 to win $200,000, that's absolutely nothing. He's got an endless supply of money. He's used golf to sublimate his gambling situation. I won't call it an addiction. If it's not ruining his life, it's just a thing. It's what he likes to do. It's his condition. And it's a sublimation. This is simply a lifestyle decision made by Phil Mickelson. It appears to me that the bets were being made in Las Vegas. I just don't see it as a story. I'm going to let it you run with this, Amal Shaw. My assumption is it's a story because when Dustin laid it out to me, now remember, Dustin's the type of guy that gets tricked by Johnny Manziel. But when Dustin laid it out to me, he said, did you hear, he's not even smiling, he's in a mood again. Did you hear that Phil Mickelson bet $1 billion? My response was, he's worth what? $700 million throughout his life. Why wouldn't he bet $1 billion? You and I would if we had that cash.
You're absolutely right about that. And the other thing, I'll tell you what's more, to me, the story is the accounting. Who's the accountant behind this that has these meticulous numbers? I'm more impressed right with that, the exact number of bets. But you're absolutely right. And I thought you brought up a great point, which is when you look at his financial situation and how much money he's made over his lifetime between winning on the PGA Tour, endorsements, other things along the way, outside investments, it shouldn't come as that much of a surprise. What is Phil Mickelson going to go do? Bet $22? I mean, he can walk from here to the parking lot and drop $22 and not even think about it. I mean, it's not even worth his time to bend down to pick it up. So for me, the numbers don't come as a surprise. I think just for a lot of people, and you brought up a good point, if you're not involved in the industry, you may sit there and think, wow, $1 billion. And how do you come to that number? If he bets $220,000 on a game, bets $220,000 on another game and loses, he just bet $420,000, wins one, loses one. He's lost $20,000, but he still bet $420,000. So I know the number sounds mind-boggling to people, but it really doesn't take as long as you would think with the type of wealth he has to accumulate those types of numbers.
100%. Well said. Currency is just, it's relative. You've got to scale it out. You hear $1 billion. I hear Phil Mickelson. I say, why not 2 billion? I mean, he's stayed in his shoes as far as I'm concerned. 220,000 when you're worth 700 million. I would have bet more. What it says to me, 43 bets in a single day in Major League Baseball. Ever heard of props? Why is this a story? Dustin Sweetelson. Now, again, and I've talked to people I respect. You know, I respect you. I've talked to people I respect about the Manziel documentary. They said he's boring. He comes across as a zero. You took nothing from the documentary. Yesterday, you told me you were blown away by it. Now, today, you told me on the phone you can't believe Phil. Stop it. You can't believe Phil Mickelson bet $1 billion. What's up, Dustin?
This is why I don't smile, because you make things up and put words in my mouth.
That's true. I do.
Like, what are you talking about? My takeaway from it is, if it's just about the itch, when you're as rich as a guy like Phil Mickelson is, if it's just about, like, I don't understand why the amounts are getting so big here. Bet $100, get your win, and move on. It's a waste of time. You're neither going to go broke or rich betting on sports at that point.
You're correct in that, and I don't disagree with what he just said there, Patrick. However, him betting $100, listen, the reason why most people bet after a certain point is you got to feel it one way or the other, whether it's the win or the loss.
So bet $100 then. I just don't get it.
Phil Mickelson feels nothing from $100.
That's what I'm
saying. It's just like it's chasing any proclivity in life, but I won't get into some of yours, big guy.
But he feels
but it's just chasing down a thrill.
Yeah, but he
chasing down pleasure. It's hedonistic. It's what we were born to do, and we try to curb it as we get older with sophistication and wisdom. This is a non-story. Anybody pretending like it's a story has never had, I guess, what you would call a hobby. Because this is a hobby for Phil Mickelson. His job, it's sublimated. His job is playing golf, and he's one of the greatest to ever do it, big guy. Look up his career earnings. Why are you mad? Why are you in a bad mood?
Because the emails are just flying in, and I have to be on top of things that I don't want to be on top of right now, if I'm being totally honest.
Will you stop booking for the network and start paying attention to this dumb show? We're trying to get somewhere. I got ESPN calling me. I got Fox calling me, asking me what my contract's about, telling me they like the three of us on the show together, and you're over here booking for DraftKings. DraftKings, here's a newsflash. Put us on the network. We'll kill it. Anywho, what else, Dustin?
June of 2020, this past June, $94.9 million. Does that feel right? $94.9 million.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Career earnings. Yeah.
Oh, that's just playing golf.
Yeah.
That's not even endorsements.
So the fact that he bet $220,000 on a couple of games means that he doesn't like risk. He's risk adverse. Stop. The only part of the story. Gosh, I got caffeine in me again. The only part of the story that matters is him trying to get down on the Ryder's Cup. That's it. That's the story if you want to talk collusion and some sort of unsavory behavior.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, this is my favorite thing that DraftKings is doing. It's DraftKings Best Ball. So they've got over $10 million in prizes up for grabs. If you want to get in on the fantasy action, but you're sick of managing your roster. Now, here's the catch and the cool part about Best Ball at DraftKings. If you're just tired of dealing with injuries that end your season, with Best Ball, you get the best of your team all season long. And again, $10 million in prizes. So for a limited time, you can join DraftKings' largest Best Ball contest ever and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished, if you act now before the offers expire. So here's how you start. You download the DraftKings app and use the code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and Snake Draft for your future team this season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scores. No ads, no drops, no trades, no I should have played him insteads. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So again, $10 million involved, but you get $1 million top prize. It's pretty awesome. What are you waiting for? Head to DraftKings. Sign up using the code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P, and start playing best ball today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required. $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is a $10 DK dollars. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Okay, we're back. It seems as though Dustin during the break settled down a little bit. It's good to see. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, and Patrick Maher. This is Sharp Money. We've got a lot to do. We've got our buddy Josh Applebaum, as I mentioned, joining. Emery Hunt's going to join, talk NFL. You've got the two preseason games coming up tonight, which is, you know, exciting. Again, just aesthetically, having it on the screen is going to be cool. You will see C.J. Stroud, Houston, New England. It does appear that New England, Amal, is going to rest most of their starters. If you see Mac for a series, okay, won't surprise. However, you're going to see mostly Bailey Zappe right now because of it. You've got Houston at 3.5, a total of 37.5. Minnesota's going to rest starters. So Nick Mullins, you'll see a ton of him. Seattle also resting starters. Drew Locke is going to get the bulk of the load. Seattle is laying 3.5. You've got a total of 35. We'll delve more into the two matchups in the pre coming up later in the show, but just a quick thought on the two of them.
It's going to be interesting with New England. Doesn't come as much of a surprise in terms of them potentially resting their guys. This is a veteran team for the most part, and I think you expect to see that something like that out of a Bill Belichick coach team. Houston, you got a quarterback competition going on, so you want to see what you're going to get out of your young guys there, Davis Mills, C.J. Stroud. It's a good opportunity for both of these guys to really kind of separate themselves from what they've done in training camp.
Dustin, you are a great guest booker. I just want you to know that, because Ben Lieber, who is the Vikings radio sideline analyst, will join us. Why? Apropos, Minnesota's playing tonight. So I just want to give you credit on your booking skills just all around, and thoughts on the two games tonight, just quickly.
It'll be nice to see New England run an offense again instead of whatever that was a year ago. And then as far as Houston goes, it feels like D'Amico Ryans, we won't know, but the reason they're laying 3.5 is because he feels like the type of head coach who wants to take this kind of serious for a little bit longer than someone else would in his first year and establishing an identity with that franchise. And on the other side, I think it's one team everyone's too low on and a team everyone's too high on this year. And everyone's obsessed with the Seahawks and everyone's just dismissing the Vikings. And I think everyone's dismissed the Vikings so much that I think they're slightly underrated.
Apology accepted. I'll say it for them all as well. Apology accepted. You were mean to us the first 16 minutes of the show, seriously, but I do accept your apology.
Part of being in a relationship is you never have to say sorry. It's like you just accept everyone for their faults.
Are you single?
All three of us are in a three-way right now.
It is true.
I'm in the middle, unfortunately.
I'm looking to upgrade.
It is true. It is true. But again, totally accept your apology. No big deal. Nebraska, remember when. So we're going Colorado, big guy Amal, Tennessee, BYU, and Nebraska. Why don't we start with Nebraska?
Okay.
Because six-time national champ, they just absolutely ran the 90s. Tom Osborne was such a good coach. He was like, I'll go to Congress, and then I'll come back from Congress, and I'll take over, and I'll run the whole entire organization as far as athletic directors. Remember, he almost became governor of the state of Nebraska. You think he matters? 94, 95, 97 national championships at Nebraska. That feels like a long way away. Why? 6 years without a winning season. And I can tell you, Dustin, and I can tell you, Amal, no one, and I mean literally no one, had Scott Frost being embarrassed. Okay, maybe you said, I don't see it with Frost. Maybe you said, I don't buy the hype like everybody else with Frost and Martinez. Remember that first year, but nobody had him being absolutely embarrassed to the point where it was an unmitigated disaster. So you go through Frost. Here comes Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule, by the way, we should all get his deal. He's making over $9 million at Nebraska, and he's getting paid $30 million not to coach the Carolina Panthers. It's a good gig if you can get it. Temple resurrected that program, 2 straight 10-win seasons. Baylor on his way out to Carolina had an 11-win season. He's taken over a team that was 4-8 last year, Amal Shaw, 3-6 in the big, lost a lot of close games, so maybe that balance comes from coaching this year. Let's dive in to 2023's Nebraska football team.
Yeah, this is an interesting team right now when you look at it. First of all, this is, as you alluded to last year, played a lot of tight games statistically, very much on par with offensively and defensively compared to their competition. But can they get over that hump? That's the big thing when you look at this team. I think Matt Rhule will give them an injection of positivity that they were lacking with Scott Frost previously. And you hit the nail on the head. I actually thought Scott Frost would be decent. I didn't know how good he would be, but I didn't think he'd be a mitigated disaster. This team right now, they've got a ton of starters back near the top in the Big Ten with 16 returning starters, Wisconsin with 17. Both sides of the ball, they've got good depth. This is going to be interesting for me is the quarterback situation in Lincoln. Casey Thompson's the guy that's expected to be potentially a starter there. I'm sorry, not Casey Thompson. It was last year. Jeff Sims, the Georgia Tech transfer, he comes in. I like his mobility, but Patrick, same problem that they had with Martinez. Incredible maneuverability, but doesn't throw the ball with accuracy. Can he get it done? I'm not completely sure he can do that. They've got Billy Kemp coming in, the transfer from Virginia. He's pretty effective in terms of receiving the football. But again, two ACC guys coming from programs that were doormats. Can they kind of help get this thing going offensively? Defensively, they're decent. They're solid. But when I look at this team overall, the expectations are somewhere in the middle of the pack in the Big Ten West. I don't really have a high or strong affinity for them. I think they'll get some wins. The early test for them going up to Minnesota, I think that's a tough spot for them. They've got to go on the road at Illinois, at Michigan State. Their road games, to me, are more difficult than some of their home games, and you generally want those home games to be a bit more challenging because then you want the road games to be softer. So this team is going to fight to potentially get to a bowl game. A 7-win season, including the bowls, is a success, in my opinion.
Yeah, regular season win total set at 6. If you want to go over them all, and Dustin, it's minus 150 at DraftKings. I like the under here. I'm not going to lie. First off, they got a big upgrade. Not just Matt Rhule. Marcus Satterfield left South Carolina to come to Nebraska. That's a huge get for Rhule. He was awesome running the South Carolina offense with a terrible offensive line. This Nebraska offensive line is getting reshuffled. You know, they went to the portal, kind of reorganizing, don't really know what we have. You mentioned Jeff Sims, Amal, and Dustin, 15 games played last 2 years. If he plays, he's tall, he's slender, dual threat, big arm. I like Jeff Sims a lot. Casey Thompson, Florida Atlantic, he left. Wide receivers, Marcus Washington's a stud. You mentioned Kemp. Keep an eye on Malachi Coleman, the big-time recruit. They brought in a bunch of wide receivers. So that's not a question, Dustin. I'll throw it to you. They lost 5 games by a touchdown or less last year. Can coaching be the difference? 4 wins last year, 6 is the win total at DK.
I'm a big Matt Rhule guy. He's back where he belongs in college football. I think his kind of the way he speaks to players plays better to a collegiate athlete than it does to a professional. And he's a guy who's won at a couple of programs where it's not easy to win at. I mean, he won 10 games at Temple. He won 11 at Baylor. Like, he turned programs around that were absolute disasters when it came to just what they were up against, not just on the field, but also off the field. This may be the hardest test of all because the expectations are pretty low at Temple, and Baylor is at least what it is in the Big 12. Recruiting and winning at Nebraska is something that feels almost near impossible. The thing about Matt Rhule for this season specifically is he's a guy who always gets a long leash, it looks like. He always gets a chance to work his way through. So I expect this team to slowly build. If you look at Temple, his first year, they went 2-10. His first year at Baylor, they went 1-11. Like, he's going to be given a chance here to really build this program back up from the ground. Because he's an offensive line guy, I think it's going to start there in the trenches and the line of scrimmage and then work its way out. With that, I think for this season, that means that they're going to lose a couple games to some inferior talent, but there's probably going to be one big game that they upset someone middle to late in the season, and that will be what brings them back with momentum for the following year. That's just the vibe I get. I don't think they're going to be a very good football team, but I hopefully think that Matt Rhule can be the guy that get them closer to being a program that matters again.
Yeah. Here's where I'm at with Matt Rhule in Nebraska. I got no vibes.
I wanted it to be more fun. They're not fun.
Well, you can't play the 6, right? The 5 and 7.
No. 6 is the number. Yeah. 6 is the number, Amal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can't play it over. You can't play it under. It's 5 and 7, 6 and 6, 7 and 5. That's the season for Big Red.
Totally agree. So, and if you want to go over, you got to pay $1.50. No chance. When we come back, Dion, Colorado. Yes, please.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Amal and Dustin, just say no. I did. Football is ready to kick off, and VSIN has everything. Dustin is hungry today. VSIN has everything you need to make a successful season this year. Our college football betting guide features best bets from writers and on-air personalities, along with team previews. All 133 FBS teams. Our NFL betting guide will help you tackle the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles on every team, with advanced stats, proven betting systems, proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and get our college football betting guide. Sign up, VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay. And remember, when you get the college football betting guide, Adam Burke did a great job of helping you put together your power ratings yourself. So if you want to just tackle handicapping on your own, feel free. When you sign up, you also get the daily picks, everything that hosts and guests have said across the board and sent over to Bill AD, get formulated and sent to you via email. So make sure you check that out. Okay, let's go. Remember when programs... We're being whimsical today, and we just went through Nebraska. Let's transition to Colorado. Colorado was cool. We were talking about the kind of the era of starter jackets. Amal, you remember with Bill McCartney, a Michigan guy, he had Eric Bieniemy was in the news yesterday. Bieniemy, Bill McCartney set up a pipeline from Colorado, from Boulder to Los Angeles. And I think he had a deal with some sort of private jet. There was a lot going on with what McCartney was doing there. Good dude, great coach. But he got talent from Los Angeles to go to Colorado, and they popped. 1990, the national championship. And then after that, you had Neuheisel, who I know you know, great guy, didn't do a good job at Colorado. Gary Barnett popped a little bit from Northwestern, but it went downhill. Dan, what was his name? Hawkins. Yeah, Dan Hawkins.
It's the Big 12.
It's the Big 12. I thought Dan Hawkins, coming from Boise, I thought the Colorado job was going to be a great opportunity for him. He was a disaster. Mike McIntyre, and then Carl Durrell, I don't even know if I'm saying it correctly. Remember UCLA, he did a terrible job. Colorado, that was the most befuddling hire. Maybe Mike Riley at Nebraska, but Durrell getting another job was absolutely fascinating, and he took the program and continued to drive it into the ground. 1-11 for Colorado last year, 1-8 in conference play. They haven't won more than five games since 2016. So in comes Deion Sanders. He came in, he cleaned house, he made sure the cleaning of the house was on social media. A couple important things here. They brought in, or Deion brought in, Sean Lewis as his offensive coordinator. Interesting move, because he was at Kent State as the head coach, but he runs, Amal Shaw, one of the fastest attacks in college football. He's going to have this offense clicking. It's going to be boom, boom, boom. Time of possession doesn't matter. It's just constantly, constantly keeping the defense on their heels. And Shedeur Sanders, obviously the coach's son, 2 years at Jackson State, over 7,000 yards and 40 touchdowns through the air. So that's where we'll start with Colorado. If you want to back up and go through the history, feel free. You've got a total set at DraftKings at 3.5. If you want to bet the under, you lay $1.35 to win a dollar.
Yeah, it's tricky when you look at the schedule in terms of wins, but let's start in the backfield. You mentioned Shedeur Sanders. Based on what we've heard talent-wise, this guy looks like he's going to be a pretty good football player, so it's a great position to start at quarterback, having someone who's ultra-talented. But then Alton McCaskill, the Houston transfer, remember, he had the knee injury last year, missed the 2022 season for Dana Holgorsen there down with the Cougars. I think he's a very good running back and a good piece for them to get started with. And bring in Jimmy Horn at a wide receiver position to transfer along with Xavier Weaver. And then the big name, Travis Hunter. Remember, he was the number one recruit a couple of years ago, expected to go to Florida State. I think they've got some pretty good pieces at the skill position. The question for me is, can they find consistency within this program? Last year, 1-11, dead last in college football in the Division I, giving up 44.5 points per game. I mean, they were 3 points worse than the nearest competitor in that market. And then you look on the offensive side of the ball, Patrick, only scoring 15 points per game, 127th out of 131 teams. So nowhere to go but up for this team. The one thing you have to give Deion Sanders a ton of credit for, he has interjected a life and an enthusiasm into this program that has been dormant for two decades. When was the last time we talked about CU? Probably talked about them the time when Nebraska got walloped by the Buffaloes and then Nebraska got to play Miami for the national championship in Oregon. That's probably the last time I can recall Colorado being a team in genuine conversation. It felt like they've been struggling for so long. You look at this team returning starters, barely anybody. I mean, they've got about a combined four starters on both sides of the ball. This team is going to be one that's very difficult to quantify from my perspective, because you've got so many transfer pieces. I'm not sure what to make of it, but I'm going to tell you, you said it. Sean Lewis might end up, we've talked about Phil Longo, you mentioned Satterfield going to Nebraska. Sean Lewis might be the best offensive coordinator hire, including Garrett Riley at Clemson, in college football. I think he can make that much of a difference with this offense that was absolutely anemic last year.
The branding, and the operative word in 2023, Dustin Sweetelson, is branding and brand extension. There isn't a human being on the planet better at branding than Deion Sanders. The only question is, what took these archaic athletic directors and universities so long to hire the guy? If you're a university and a program in need of a kick in the ass, here's what Deion's going to do. Deion's going to be there for 3 years, and he's going to bail for a better job. But what he's going to do, Amal, he's going to revitalize the program. And then Sean Lewis will take over, and Sean Lewis will continue to win football games at Colorado. The idea that it took this long for Deion Sanders, I don't care if he knows nothing about football. That's not what I'm talking about. What he does is he connects with kids, new age kids, in a way that will get kids to come to Colorado and Boulder. What happens? That begats other kids and the next generation to come to Boulder. The idea that it took this long is freaking ridiculous. He did great at Jackson State. He's going to do great here. My assumption is he probably gets to four just by cult of personality. He is that dude. The team isn't very good. They do have Travis Hunter, who's going to be a two-way player, who's by far and away the best player on this team and a pro already. Dustin Sweetelson, the Deion Sanders hire is a home run and a no-brainer.
Probably the most fun athlete we had growing up was Deion Sanders. I mean, prime time was it.
Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders right there. That's it.
And, I mean, I had Deion Sanders shoes. I begged my parents for weeks to get them for me. Here's the thing with Deion, though. It's a bit of an uphill battle, not just because of what Colorado's been through, but where he's coming from. This isn't the SWAC anymore. And at Jackson State, he had a major advantage because, one, credit to him, he was putting his own resources into the program. We're talking financially. Like, they were ahead of a lot of the other schools that they were playing. They had more players coming in that were bigger recruits that shouldn't have even been playing in the SWAC because of Deion. Things are going to even out a little bit here with that competitive advantage. The thing I like about Deion is he's the CEO. He doesn't think that he's going to get boggled up by all the minutia of trying to be super involved with one position group or the other. He hired a great offensive coordinator, as you guys mentioned in Lewis. He hired Charles Kelly, who spent 3 years working under Nick Saban at Alabama. And he said, I'm going to give them the best talent possible in this situation. This could go really well. This could go really poorly. Deion Sanders is in a unique spot in that no one's going to judge him if it goes badly this year, but we're all going to be really excited if things somehow come together. He brought in so many big-time transfers from across the country that want to play for him. And here's the thing. If it works out this year, let's say they win 5 or 6 games somehow, next year's going to be insanity for the Colorado Buffaloes.
Well, guys, think about this. They're playing TCU. Fox's Big Noon show is going to be in Fort Worth. And it's not because the Horned Frogs got beat by 3
Good
million
point.
In the national championship game.
Good
it's point. Because of Deion. One other thing to remember with Deion, he's one of the few athletes who's our generation, Patrick, that the younger guys still know because of his dual sport. All the parents, everybody revered Deion Sanders. You don't have to be a Deion Sanders fan, but everybody respected what he was as a football player and a baseball player. And one other thing to remember when he was a football player that doesn't get enough credit, he was a film junkie. Trust me when I tell you, just based on the way he's assembling this program at Colorado, there is going to be a discipline to it that is eventually going to be successful long-term. I don't know if he's going to be great. I think he's on the way to potentially being there. But I don't think this program, in 3 years, this program is going to be competing in the Big 12 for a championship. That's what I think he brings to the table.
The only way I'll disagree with you, too, is I don't think this is a step up for him. If Colorado loses every game this year, he'll market and turn winning no games into something. I swear, when I tell you that he just turns negatives into positives and says, you say this, okay, I'll say this, that this is what he's been doing his whole entire life. When, you know, he was taking a helicopter to play baseball and football in the same day, like, he just does the improbable and he makes people believe. It's a hire to rejuvenate. This is not a long-term project for Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders is not interested in Boulder, Colorado. He is going to inject this university and program with life, Dustin. That's it.
It comes down to one thing, depth. And for fun alone, I would like to go over the 3.5 at plus 115.
Let's come back.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch it, but there's no way I'd go under, just in case lightning in a bottle, right?
Washington State, Colorado State, and watch out, Nebraska.
Okay. BYU goes from independent to a league. It's a remember when school. They're next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay. This is where the money is made. It's football season. Nobody knows football like VSIN, and now's the time to become a VSIN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and NFL guides. Only VSIN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. You can sign up now for $199. You'll receive both the guides, full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl. So think about that. Get a lot of content. Or join now for $19 for your first month and see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options. Become part of the Sports Betting Network. Okay, we're back. Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Hope you're having a nice Thursday. I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. If it sounds like I've calmed down a bit, that was the first break, and I think Amal would agree, where we got a normal Dustin. It does feel like we got him back. He was dealing with some, you know, office emails during the first couple of segments, but it does appear like you're back to normal, big guy.
I don't know. We'll see. It takes one email. One email will throw me off.
But, you know, part of the problem is there should be a class or a course for people when there's a group email sent out. Do not reply to everybody. Just respond to the person who sent the email so you can address that question instead of the rest of us getting in our inbox.
Thank you. Dustin, can I just say one thing that I noticed when you were having a bit of a panic and anxiety attack?
That I was shoving food in my mouth the whole time?
You were anxiously eating.
Yeah.
You were mindlessly shoving food into your mouth and you didn't realize you were eating food. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know it looks that way, but it's really that I forgot to eat this morning, which I know, look at me. You wouldn't expect that to happen. It seems like a priority. So I was shoving almonds and beef jerky into my face.
I would say the black today that you're wearing, very slimming. So I wouldn't have said that. Said that.
It's an intentional move, believe me.
You're always getting out in front of it, aren't you? BYU. This is an interesting one to talk about, Amal, because 84, Lavelle Edwards. Have you guys ever driven through Provo? It's the stadium's right there, right in campus. It's actually quite beautiful with the mountains in the background. Lavelle Edwards Stadium was there for 30 years. It was quarterback you know, McMahon, Steve Young, Mark Wilson. Ty Detmer won the Heisman. Amal and I remember very much all of Ty Detmer's career. But in 84, when they won that national championship, that capped a 24-game win streak. Just to give you an idea of how prolific this BYU program was back in the day. Also, instigators Lavelle, I can't remember the assistant on his staff that kind of started the West Coast offense.
Norm Chow.
That is now so prevalent across football. And it's BYU who also, low-key, have been successful. 16 winning seasons in the last 17. Think about that, fellas. That's pretty good. 17 bowl appearances in the last 18 years. This is a program that's done very, very well. Kalani Sitake took over for, was it Bronco Mendenhall? And he's in Sitake's in his eighth year, 8-5 last year. But they move as an independent to the Big 12. So the schedule is going to be a bit of a step up. But this is just to start with an overview on BYU, this is a different type of school. Obviously, the Mormonism and the, what do they call them? Not adventures that these kids go on.
So they go on
but
a two-year mission, yeah.
Missions, pardon me. But it's also an international fan base. I don't think people realize in the States that BYU is big all over the country because of its denomination. And you'll often see so many players from like Hawaii and certain regions of the world because they're BYU. It's a very unique program, and it's what makes college football pretty cool. You know what used to make college football pretty cool? Conferences. Anyway, they move away from being an independent, so they get that Big 12 schedule. It's going to be a bit of a step up. 8 wins last year. The win total set at 5.5 in the regular season. Over at DraftKings Mall, I'll let you run with BYU.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. You mentioned Kalani Sitake. He's been there for a while now. He's a defensive guy, and the one thing that surprised me last year, BYU ranked 97th in scoring defense, giving up almost 30 points per game. You wouldn't expect that out of the Cougars with Sitake on that side of the ball. They've got to get better there. This is a team that averaged slightly over 30 points per game, but you mentioned the challenging schedule is going to change because, first of all, they open with Sam Houston. If you're not familiar with the Bearcats, this is a good football team. They're going to be a challenge. They get Southern Utah. They go at Arkansas, a return trip from the game last year. Not an easy schedule. I don't know how they're going to do this year in the league, but I think they're going to be towards the bottom half of the league. 7 starters back on defense, just 4 on the offensive side of the ball, Patrick. Keaton Slovis, if that name rings a bell, he is probably going to be the starting quarterback here. Remember, he played at USC, transferred over to Pittsburgh. He's been around a little bit. So expect Keaton Slovis to potentially get the start there under center. But we've seen some good talented players. This is a program that's had a history of great quarterbacks. You talked about it. Aiden Robbins comes in, transfer from UNLV and Louisville. They've got a lot of things they've got to work out. Offensive line traditionally has been good with the Cougars. Three replacements come in terms of transfers on the O-line. So some concerns there as well for this team. I don't know if BYU could realistically get back to where they were at one point in time. But this program will always be consistent. They're going to play hard. You mentioned it. Guys go on two-year missions. They come back a little bit more mature. They've got guys that are 22 to 25 on their roster many times. This is a program that will give you some tough games. I just don't know, stepping into the Big 12, if they've got the skill to match the Texas, the Oklahomas, and some of the other programs in that league. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But you mentioned going to Provo. I've never been to Provo, but every time I watch a game there, I'm like, that's one of those five stadiums that I'd love to visit and see a game at.
Yeah, it's just I haven't been inside, but electric from the outside. Kadon Slovis, as you mentioned, absolutely will be the starter. He's got great wide receivers, Keanu Hill and Cody Epps and Chase Roberts. So he's got skill. Isaac Rex, the transfer, there's skill, the tight end. Jared Hall, if that name rings a bell, he's a quarterback last year. You're going to see him tonight playing for Minnesota. Didn't he get drafted by Minnesota? I believe he did. The BYU quarterback from last year. The offense wasn't the issue last year, big guy. 31 points per, as Amal mentioned. It was the defense. Now, they've transferred and hit the portal hard. But that was a very, and Satake does focus on D, that was a very mediocre defense last year. Dustin, the win total set at 5.5 for BYU.
Yeah, I mean, and you got Arkansas at Arkansas as an out-of-conference game this year. Like, that is a tough one. The thing about BYU is, to me, I said this with a couple teams yesterday, they're less a team I think about in terms of futures and more a team that I'll find a reason to back during the season. Because a lot of these guys are older, if you have a team that they're facing that's super hot and super trendy, I like to back a team like BYU to cover against a superior program. Like, I'm going to be intrigued when they play Texas. Curious what the line will be on October 28th. Matchups like that, where I think a veteran stoic team led by a very stoic head coach in Satake, who I like a lot, I don't know if it's good enough to compete week in and week out once that Big 12 schedule hits. I mean, Kansas is different than they're used to seeing now. It's not like the old Kansas before Leopold got there. They've got to deal with teams like Cincinnati, who enters the Big 12 with them. Like, it's going to be a grind for this group.
Six wins is a lot. Yeah,
I can't look at the total.
I thought it was.
I would agree.
It was six is the number. I thought, okay, someplace I saw
five and a half. But yeah, if you want to go over, you got to get to six.
I got to be honest, guys. I would go under here. I look at the schedule going at Texas, at Morgantown. Can you imagine flying from Provo, but Salt Lake City to Morgantown? Not an easy trip. Dustin mentioned at Arkansas. You've got to go to TCU. The game in Lawrence will not be the gimme that it used to be at one point in time. You close out in Stillwater.
It's an uphill battle year one.
Yeah, guys, I think this team is going to be at about 3 to 4 victories. 5 is an optimistic number. I think 5.5 is just a reputation number here on BYU, who, as you alluded to, 16 out of the last 17 years winning seasons, Patrick. I just don't see it. I think this is going to be an under 500 year for the Cougs.
I just can't believe. And again, Douglas is getting a lot of credit with the Jets for his draft. I can't believe he watched Zach Wilson against an independent schedule with receivers running go routes, running about three plays a game, just absolutely slanging it with nothing in his face. And Douglas paid millions, said, we'll take that guy.
A COVID schedule where his best game was against Coastal Carolina that was scheduled hours notice.
Yeah, correct.
Those guys at Coastal right now are working as GA somewhere.
Just unbelievable. But it's like Douglas gets a lot of credit because he drafted Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson. I'm not being facetious. The three of us definitely would have taken the two same players.
Hold on a second.
What are we talking about here?
I said when
your only job is to draft a quarterback. That's it.
Patrick Surtain played.
Donkey?
Patrick Surtain played in that national championship game against Ohio State. I said Garrett Wilson minus the two quarterbacks, Mac Jones and Justin Fields, would have the longest career of any pro on that field. I mean, it's not like you could see Garrett. Just go. All you need to see is one play of Garrett Wilson. The catch against Clemson, you're like, we'll see you in the first round.
I think you're right, Dustin. I watched that scheduled game within 48 hours against Coastal and decided to hang the franchise on Zach Wilson. They ran like six routes. And they were go routes. So, Douglas, I mean, come on. It would be so much fun to be a GM. We should do that. You know what? Let's move the show. Let's move the show to a front office. Josh Applebaum is next.